This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Just after 10 in the great city of Chicago. Blessed to be working with Danny Zetterman and Christopher Bleck. I'm David Kaplan, Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Don't forget the baseball show every night at 6 with the great Jonathan Hood. You got Carmen Yerk show coming up at noon, Waddle and Sylvie at 2 o'clock. I want to read you fine gentlemen something. Okay? This is an article by Bill Barnwell, who, again, I like. I think Bill's an excellent writer. But you can hang your hat on all the freaking numbers and analytics and go, well, he threw into this window and he's not very good there, but this guy's really good, so that means he's a really good, accurate passer. Stop with all the analytical crap. This is what he wrote August 2nd, 2013. One guy is the GM of the future in the National Football League, mixing the old school scouting with the new school analytics. You know who that guy was? Phil freaking Emery. Phil Emery, the GM of the future. So my point is, Barnwell does his homework. He works hard. He's a really good guy. He ain't the be-all, end-all. And he wants to rank the Bears 28th offensively. Go get him, big guy, because at the end of the year, you may be right, I may be right. But if I'm right, I'm going to be screaming, take that from the mountaintops. That's my point. There's a lot of damn talent on this football team. Let's go to the phones. 312-332-3776. Joe's in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hey, Joe, what's up, Sparky?
Hey, Cap, listening to you on the app. And about 2 weeks ago, you were really fired up and never more excited about anything in your life than the road trip. How'd that go for you?
It was great. Had a really good time.
I'm still looking for the ticket or the pictures.
I posted a whole bunch of pictures. Go to the Instagram, kid.
On the road trip?
Absolutely.
Like, as you were driving through America.
Well, we drove through parts of America, yeah, on the West Coast.
California.
Exactly.
There's a few states in between Chicago and California.
Yeah, we went over those states.
Oh, okay. Well, you were fired up about that, too.
No question about it. No question. Okay. All right, thanks, kid.
Talk to you later.
Say, hey, tell your friends up in Wisconsin to put a mask on, okay? Appreciate that.
Oh, no. There's no virus.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. 3-1, my neighbor Rodney. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you. My neighbor Rodney's in the store in Wisconsin. He's away with his family for a few days. Is COVID a thing down there in Chicago to you people? Yeah. You heard about the ongoing cholesterol problem in the country, too? Let's go to Patrick on the south side. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Cap, real quick. You know, I keep hearing you say, you look at this football team, but really all I keep hearing you talk about is the defense. Yes, if we're strictly talking the defense, we could easily win 11, 12 games like we did in 2018 based on the defense. But what about the offense has you thinking that they can win 11, 12 games? I mean, we still got the same ding-dong calling plays. We still got the same ding-dong throwing the football around the field, overthrowing. And as far as the Bears' offense only being 28th, the only weapon we have proven is Allen Robinson.
Okay.
One player.
First of all, games are won and lost by more than going, well, but our offense is this. Same ding-dong call and plays. A year ago, going into at this point, that ding-dong, as you call him, was the reigning NFL coach of the year. I am
but that's
more than
a joke. He won that based on trick plays, Cap. I mean, come on. This guy, he's a great.
Stop, please.
As far as being a head coach,
Patrick,
he's good.
Patrick.
Morale-wise.
Patrick.
Go ahead.
Listen to me. First of all, you talk to his players. They love playing for this guy. Now, did
absolutely.
They have a good year?
He brings a positive. But as far as calling plays, this guy, he's lost. He cannot in-game, he cannot change his strategy. And that is the problem.
He was 12-4 the year
the defense
before.
Was 12-4.
No.
Oh, jeez.
At the end of the day, they don't go, the Chicago Bears, Matt, we're going to give you 6 wins because the defense gets the other six, they don't go on your ledger. At the end of the day, Patrick,
doesn't put that offense, that horrible offense, in great position at the 30-yard line, and they still come up with only 3 points.
That's all a lot of nonsense. At the end of the day, you are what your record says you are. Period.
Yeah, it was a fluke, Cap. It was a fluke. Okay. We'll agree to disagree. I'll keep listening. Love you, guy. Keep
love you. You're the man. Stay positive. Stay fired up. 312-332-3776. Gorman in Mount Greenwood. Gorman, what's up?
Hey, welcome back, Cap. Glad to have you back home.
Good to be back, kid.
Yeah, you know, I'm optimistic as you are. I'm hoping that they do as well as you think they're going to do. My biggest concern is that O-line, like one of the other callers was talking about a little bit earlier. So if you could relate to me why you don't think that the O-line is going to be a huge problem this year and, you know, why they shouldn't have grabbed that kid from Boise State, I thought that would have been a really good addition instead of that cornerback that they grabbed. And I'm going to shut up and listen to what you have to say.
Appreciate the call. Appreciate you always listening. The thing that I liked about them drafting a cornerback is that everybody I talked to up there said we have got to get a corner. Now, look, if the offensive lineman from Boise State was the best guy on their board, they would have taken him. They liked Jalen Johnson. Look, I don't get paid to break down the tape on Jalen Johnson and the offensive lineman from Boise State or Central Framingham State or Slippery Rock State. It doesn't matter. Their board said, that's the best player on the board. We've got to take him. Now, they believe by bringing in Jermaine Ifedi, who started 60 games in Seattle. Now, we can whiz all over that player and go, hey, he's not that good. He started 60 games on one of the better franchises in the National Football League. He feels like being with Juan Castillo, he can take the next step. So if and only if their offensive line is healthy, which it was not a year ago, Bobby Massey missed a handful of games. Kyle Long ended up for the third straight year, much as I love him, on injured reserve, and he's no longer in the National Football League. They feel like they're going to be healthier, and they feel like they're going to be better prepared. Cody Whitehair's a stud. James Daniels, everyone loved that pick around the league. He's going into year three. It's either put up or shut up time, okay? He has got to be a road grader at guard. But if they're healthy, they believe their offensive line is going to be markedly better. In the end, their 1 to 53 man roster, I like. Do they have a great quarterback? No, not at this point. And it'll probably be Nick Foles. Maybe it'll be Mitchell Trubisky, but one of them is going to have to step up and take care of the football. I just think with that defense, improved play calling, better blocking, they're going to be a better football team than people have given them credit for. So we'll see. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Let's grab John in Rolling Meadows. Hey, John, what's up, man?
Hey, Dave, how was your vacation?
It was nice. Nice to get away and good to be back.
Great. Yeah, I'm glad you had fun.
Appreciate it.
You know, I feel safer with Nick as a backup because that way if Mitch doesn't have a good game and he's throwing picks, you can bring Nick in. He can change the pace of the game. But if you're starting Nick and you got to fall back on Mitch, that's not a good feeling. I mean, then you're going from, you might be moving the ball up and down the field. Nick gets hurt. Mitch comes in and all of a sudden stagnant. The reason I called though, if you remember back in 84, the Bears were more of a blitzing team back then than they are these days. They depend more on their front four for pass rush and an occasional linebacker going in. But the thing that bothers me with our play calling is that after five or six attempts, they back away from that and go to the passing game. He's got to get off that bus.
Well, he feels
running
like
the ball this year.
He absolutely appreciate your call, John. Matt Nagy told Sylvie, We are I was wrong. I was bad. I'm going to be better at it. And we are going to stay wedded to the running game. We'll find out. All right, we've got to take a timeout. And the Hawks have an issue between the pipes, and it is a big one. Charlie Rumeliotis, Blackhawks insider, NBC Sports Chicago, joins us next.
You're listening to Cap and Company. See what Sparkles is up to on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today. Cap and Company.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Rolling on ESPN 1000. We'll get back to more of your calls and talk some football in a little bit. Talk about life in the NBA bubble with Mark Spears. What's it like being a journalist quarantined after taking your COVID test down there? We'll get all that from Mark a little later in the show. But Charlie Rumeliotis, my co-worker, and he's outstanding at his job at NBC Sports Chicago as their Blackhawks insider, joins us now. Charlie, we wake up yesterday to find out that why they use this term, and it's not the Hawks, it's the NHL. Corey Crawford is unfit to play. There are other guys in the league who got the same designation, but immediately you start thinking all these nefarious things, like what does that mean? Do you expect him back at all before they start getting ready to play Edmonton?
Yeah, that's obviously the million-dollar question right now, because this isn't a typical training camp where you can ease into things, get a few preseason games under your belt, and even maybe just get that regular, the first regular season couple games to kind of get into the groove of a marathon of a regular season. It's going to be go, go, go right when they get to Edmonton with only one exhibition game. So the fact that Corey Crawford is not on the ice on day one for the Blackhawks is a bit concerning.
So who do they hand the keys to the net to? Malcolm Subban, who is P.K. Subban's brother? Is it Colin Delia? What do they do here?
Yeah, well, right now they're going to rotate with the three and four goaltenders that they have outside of Corey Crawford, but you kind of it's hard not to look ahead to that Edmonton series and wonder if Corey Crawford isn't ready to go, which goaltender would they turn to? Because the four other goaltenders combined have 76 starts. Corey Crawford has 85 playoff starts. So the fact that those four other goaltenders really have little experience obviously is a huge discrepancy, but Malcolm Subban is the guy that has obviously been around longer. He has more NHL experience, but his numbers in the NHL aren't very good. And Colin Delia is actually the guy who has really performed well in Rockford. So I kind of tend to lean towards Colin Delia, but they might just go with the NHL experience in Subban.
So let's assume Corey was there and there was no hiccup. There was nothing. Did you, as a guy who's around this team and covers them as close as anyone, think they had a chance not only to beat Edmonton, but to make a run in this postseason tournament? Or did you feel like they might beat Edmonton, they might not, but they have zero chance of making a deep run to try and win the cup?
Yeah, well, the Blackhawks were a popular pick to upset Edmonton, and given that star power of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, and you probably figured that those two guys would cancel each other out with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and Corey Crawford would serve as the X factor because the Oilers have mediocre goaltending at best. So you figured if Corey Crawford can get hot, and he was very hot prior to the pause, he had a 928 save percentage from January 1st and on prior to the pause. So if Corey Crawford, he could easily steal a 5-game series and then potentially another 7-game series. So I don't know if Stanley Cup run would have been realistic, but yeah, certainly the Blackhawks could have made some noise, especially given the fact that every team across the NHL hasn't been on the ice for 4 straight months.
So, and we're talking with Charlie Rumeliotis from NBC Sports Chicago, their Blackhawks insider. He's, you know, done stuff on our hockey show here on ESPN. So as you look at this team, and I look at the three finalists announced for the NHL MVP today, and one of them is Artemi Panarin, who the Hawks, for whatever reason, couldn't hang on to. I know they had salary issues, but he's a great, great hockey player, and they made a trade with Columbus that ended up not being very good. How close is this team in a normal year? Let's assume next season goes off without a hitch and we're able to play all 82. Is this a team you think is close?
Well, I think the unfortunate part about where the Blackhawks were trending is that they were banking on the salary cap to significantly increase in the years to come, especially with a new U.S. television deal on the horizon and Seattle entering the league as a 32nd team. And literally a week before the NHL got put on pause, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly projected the salary cap to increase by $3 to $6 million. And that would have been a substantial increase from the prior years. But now the salary cap upper limit is not going to see that low end of that projection for at least probably 3 or 4 years. And that is a huge, that definitely does not benefit a team like the Blackhawks who are banking on some of those contracts like Dominic Kubalik and Dylan Strome and obviously Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist. They're going to be new contracts in a couple years as well. So you kind of look at this next window from now until the end of Kane and Taves' contract, that it's going to be a real tight salary squeeze, and maybe their arc was trending a little bit upwards when they have all these influx of young players, but they're not going to have a lot of money to spend at all going forward.
Charlie, this team has had their issues defensively. They get Brent Seabrook back on the ice yesterday. I believe Calvin DeHaan was on the ice yesterday, but nobody's confusing those two with Bobby Orr in his prime either, because they're aging and they're coming off surgeries. Defensively, can this be a better hockey team in the Edmonton series than what we've seen, or is that pie in the sky dreaming?
Well, when I was doing research on the series initially, obviously you kind of look at the statistical comparison and you see the Blackhawks are right there at the bottom of the league in most high danger chances and scoring chances allowed. And even it was the case last season too. So the fact that but at the same time, when you look at those stats, it was like, man, that was 4 months ago. Like, this feels like a completely different season, and nothing has really changed, obviously, with the roster-wise, but it's going to be very difficult, I guess, for the Blackhawks to maybe become this, average defensive team. That's why it was so important for them to have a guy like Corey Crawford behind the crease or in the crease so it can maybe steal a series or two in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
The Blackhawks made a bunch of changes on the hockey operations side during the pandemic. The Bulls cleaned house. Paxton Garr no longer in charge. Arturas, Mark Eversley, and all these other guys. The Blackhawks still have Stan Bowman in the position of authority, but I think they changed out 8 names and they changed some titles and got some new guys in here. Was that a complete overhaul, or is that more of a cosmetic thing until they figure out what they want to do at the top of hockey operations?
Yeah, I still think there could be more moves to be made, because I don't necessarily think this was a Stan Bowman move. Obviously, they changed the titles of 9 guys, and 8 of them weren't renewed. So it seems like significant changes were made, but a lot of the titles were just tweaked. And the Blackhawks were one of the teams in the NHL, probably the number one team in the league as far as how their manpower in the hockey ops department and their scouting department as well. So that part wasn't surprising, but I still feel like this is probably coming from much higher up and that we still could see some changes at the end of the season.
You know, I love watching hockey. I'm excited that it's going to be back. I don't think there's going to be a home ice advantage, but I guess anytime you've got to get out of your city, get on a plane, especially during a pandemic, and fly up to Canada, do you feel like this gives the Oilers a huge advantage? Because there's going to be no fans in there.
I'm actually in the minority, and I don't think it's going to give the Oilers an advantage much at all. And I actually think the Blackhawks might benefit a little bit more here, because they've been a much better road team this season than at home. They have that underdog mentality. I remember in January and February, they went on a ridiculous road run where they felt like they were playing better, simplifying their game. And I think you ask NHL players across the league, they'll tell you that the Edmonton Oilers have the best ice in the league. And so I think that benefits a team like the Blackhawks, who have a lot of star power and they want that fresh ice. But as far as home ice advantage, I feel like the bigger home ice advantage would have been outside the arena, right? Like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl get to sleep in their own beds while Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves are sleeping in hotel rooms. But that won't be the case, because all of these players are going to be inside this bubble environment.
The salary cap, Charlie, is going to be flat, I believe, throughout this brand new CBA that somehow Gary Bettman was able to get negotiated and finalized with Don Fehr, which, tip your cap to Gary Bettman You know, he gets booed everywhere he goes, but their plan to return to play looks good, and get a CBA done with gives you some long-term labor peace for 5 years. That looks good. So with the salary cap remaining flat, what are the Hawks' options after this shortened playoff deal is over and we get ready for a full season again?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not even looking at the UFA names. I'm looking at they have to take care of their own house first. Dominik Kubalik and Dylan Strome are pending restricted free agents. And now what's their contract going to look like? And oh, by the way, Corey Crawford is also due a new contract. So now you have to figure out who your number one goaltender is going to be going forward. And can you fit Corey Crawford under the salary cap? And if maybe he's not ready to go for that Edmonton series and Malcolm Subban or Colin Delia stands on their head, does it make the Blackhawks reconsider their options at goaltender? So it's a lot of, you know, I honestly haven't even done any research on the unrestricted free agent class and who could come to Chicago, because it's going to be real challenging for the Blackhawks to take care of their own house.
So when you look at what they're doing here, so what you're telling me is they better have tremendous player development, because they're not going out and getting, I'm just picking a name, an Artemi Panarin type that hits free agency. They got no shot.
Yeah, they definitely have no shot. And I think we're going to see it across the NHL too. Maybe some of these UFAs are going to settle on shorter-term deals to maybe get their max payout in a few years, because this isn't a normal financial landscape right now. But, yeah, I definitely wouldn't consider the Blackhawks a player in any of those, because they have the seventh fewest cap space available at this NHL pause, and they didn't even have Kubalik, Strome, or Corey Crawford, I guess, for their contracts next season. So I don't expect the Blackhawks to be big-game players.
Last thing, who do you believe, when we start hockey 2020-2021, is between the pipes? Is it one of the young guys they've got? Have they brought Corey Crawford back on a two-year deal? Or is there any chance Robin Leonard rides back in and says, all right, I'll take that deal?
Yeah, I still think it's going to be Corey Crawford, just because I don't know that the Blackhawks have a better option. We obviously mentioned the discrepancy between the games played and the experiences with the four other goaltenders listed in the pipeline versus Crawford. Like, they still need someone in there to groom the next guy. And it would be real unfair ask if they ask Colin Delia or Malcolm Subban or whatever to step in as a full-time goaltender next season. But at the same time, the financial ramifications of this COVID-19 pandemic have certainly changed the outlook for the Blackhawks.
Hey, man, appreciate the knowledge. And by the way, there was a picture that you put out on Twitter. Someone said, you know, show me a picture of when you were a kid and what you're doing professionally. And I retweeted it and thought, this is so great. There's a picture of a young Charlie Remeliotis. How old were you in that picture?
I think I was 15 years old and Patrick Kane was 18.
Okay, so Patrick Kane's a rookie. Charlie's getting his autograph at, like, where, Blackhawks convention?
Yeah, well, it was actually the Chicago Auto Show, their first year, when Keenan Taves did that signing.
Yep, they were there for Chevrolet. And then the next picture is you interviewing him in your role as a TV guy at NBC Sports Chicago. For any young man or woman that is listening going, man, I want to be a sportscaster, you are living proof, man, of a guy who took his passion and turned it into a career.
Thank you, Cap. I appreciate that. I'm always forever grateful for the opportunity here in Chicago, and being able, I feel like a hometown kid that got drafted by his own team, and I get to do this for a living. So very lucky, and I also want to shout out to you for everything that you've done in my career to help me get to this point. So thank you, Cap.
My pleasure. You've earned everything. You are outstanding. See you on TV later today.
Yep, see you. Appreciate it.
You got it. There he is, Charlie Remeliotis from NBC Sports Chicago. Not only a really good reporter, but a hell of a good dude. 312-332-3776. What are the Bulls really missing out on in the bubble? Are they missing something by not being there? We'll discuss that next.
This is Cap and Company. Follow on Twitter at TheCapMan.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Rolling on ESPN 1000 with Danny Zetterman, Christopher Bleck. I'm David Kaplan, 312-332-3776. So, The Bulls may not play a meaningful NBA game for 9 months. They also are not part of the cool crowd down in Orlando in the bubble. Brian Windhorst had some very interesting comments yesterday on what might happen with players who are currently in the bubble.
It's not like I think that tampering is on everyone's mind. I think it's something that happens naturally, like any friendships would form.
Right.
And this is what is, you know, there's going to be stuff that happens out of this bubble where guys spend time together and become friends, and it affects things that happen down the line, I think. And what you're describing, that you saw guys eating dinner with each other, is a part of that.
Okay, so Brian is saying, Danny, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian truly believes or feels like there's this chance that, like what happened with LeBron, Wade, Bosh teaming up, we could see groups of guys going, hey, you want to have dinner? And then 3 months later, boy, I've enjoyed hanging out with Danny and Chris. Why don't we all team up? Because we've been bowling together and fishing together and hanging out in the bubble together and going through all of this. We ought to all play together while the Chicago Bulls are back in their either the Advocate Center or each guy's at home and they're not part of those discussions. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He said there that friendships made in the bubble could eventually lead to players teaming up. We all know the story about LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. They were together on that Olympic team, and that's where the whole idea kind of was created, that they were going to form the big three and play together. And I know Carmelo Anthony was part of that also, which never came to fruition. The point is, these guys are going to be in that bubble for 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 12 weeks, all together, hanging out with nothing but time on their hands. You're telling me they can't come up with a plan to, hey, we should play together? Hey, Anthony Davis, your contract's up at the end of next year. What do you say you come over here to Milwaukee? I know Milwaukee's not the most glamorous city in the world, but, you know, come play with me. That's Giannis talking to Anthony Davis. Totally 100% possible. Now, Zach LaVine's not in that bubble. He can't recruit anyone to the Bulls. Kobe yeah. White's not in that bubble. He can't be recruiting anyone to come to the Bulls.
First of all, and again, this might be my optimistic Chicago-centric look at things like I've been doing with the football team. I get it. It's going to depend on how much salary space you have. Is your owner willing to write a check for a big contract following a global pandemic where you have no fans? And I look at a Chicago opportunity where you've got a new GM in Mark Eversley who has all these great ties because of 10 years as a Nike employee and a player relations rep. All these guys are represented by the same handful of agents, whether it's an Arne Tellem or a Clutch Sports or a Mark Bartlestein or a Bill Duffy. I mean, you're talking about all of the elite guys go to 97% have the same agents. So in the end, if the Bulls can create salary cap space, I'm not talking about this summer or the end of this truncated season, a year from now, they're going to have an opportunity with this new front office to go out and strike and hit a home run. They've got to be good in the draft. They got to get some breaks in the draft. They've been picking seventh forever, it seems like. They also have to do a way, way better job at player development, and that's all being overhauled so that Kobe White takes the next step and Zach LaVine takes the next step and Lauri Markkanen takes like 8 steps and Wendell Carter takes another step. I understand where Brian's coming from, but in the end, you got to be able to write the check or it doesn't matter how much guys like hanging out in the bubble. Do you agree, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking just overall, the outlook is positive. I agree. But I think to the conversation about the NBA bubble, there's a few things in play. One being, I think there is merit to individuals bonding in a adverse situation and a different situation that could lead to friendships in the future. Thus, I could see guys coming together and just having a different bond because of this experience they're going to go through, and the Bulls are not included in this experience. I would also then layer in there that if you're looking into free agency and where guys are going to, you know, sign as pairing up as duos or three guys coming together and trying to pick a team, I would say it's unlikely to suggest that the Bulls are just immediately in that field, because it would be likely that the good teams would be the teams that would be able to sign multiple top-level players and convince guys to go there. So thus, the Bulls are on the outside looking in again, because the best teams in the league are in the NBA bubble. So, like, I get what Windhorst is saying. A situation like this, you look back at the past, it's been when guys are together away from their normal teams, their normal settings, the Olympics, Team USA, other situations, that's when these individuals bond. So I could see it happening in the NBA bubble. Yeah, the Bulls have a positive outlook if you're just looking at the organization overall and trying to restructure and reshape everything going forward. But specifically with the NBA bubble and what's going to take place here, yeah, I think it's it would have benefited the Bulls to be involved, but then they would have had to been a better team last season to be invited.
Yeah, and Cap, you're talking about how the Bulls will have the opportunity if they can clear cap space and they can write the checks and Mark Eversley has the relationships. That's all fine and good, but being in the bubble gives a team an advantage because it's time spent together. Yeah, and all the things Mark Eversley could do with his connections with agents are fine, but we're seeing more and more NBA players are choosing their destinations. They're making the choices. The agents are just there to facilitate that. So all Mark Eversley's relationships with agents, that's going to be great for us, but Zach LaVine being in that bubble, hanging out with guys, Lauri Markkanen being in that bubble, talking to guys, hanging out with guys, being with them, those are the relationships that would give the Bulls an advantage when it came time to signing free agents, not just a blank check and money to spend.
I don't disagree with you, but if Danny Zetterman is down in the bubble and he and I are hanging out and I go, dude, you got to come play with me, and we become really, really close down there, like we have a good friendship, but now we go through this global pandemic together and we get through it and we hang out and we're eating our meals together. And I'm like, dude, you're going to be a free agent. Come play with us. And someone says to you, Danny, I know you want to go play with Cap in, pick the city, Portland, and they could pay you X. But you should look at that Chicago situation. New front office, new blood, amazing city that supports its athletes. And guess what? They could pay you more money. More money and a great stage. You're going to say to me, bro, I loved hanging out with you at the Disney World.
Yeah, but
Disney
now you're changing the conversation to that the Bulls can offer more money. Where did we ever say that the Bulls were going to... When it comes down to professional athletes, the money usually is the bottom line. So Agreed. Now that you threw the more money in, of course, it's going to lean your way. But if all things are equal, we're discussing if all things are equal,
okay,
a friendship goes in the pro column.
And hold on. Let's call it what it is. What the team is doing and preparing has very little to do with if players decide to team up and go somewhere. Like, go back to last summer and what went into Kyrie and KD deciding to go to Brooklyn. Very little of that had to do with, like, basketball operation metrics and things that they're figuring out behind the scenes. It was Durant and Kyrie wanted to play together. They wanted to be in a major market, and they wanted a organization that would kind of push everything to the side to cater to them. So, like, the players control this. And if there are strong players creating strong bonds within the bubble, they will be the ones that dictate where they go, and they will dictate who gets to come along. And so to what Windhorst says and what Danny brought up, yeah, it's not a major concern, but it kind of stinks that the Bulls once again are on the outside looking in. They're not there to even be in the conversations. The players themselves, LaVine, Markkanen, Porter, all these guys, that they're not the ones creating the relationships. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with the organization. It's the players.
And right. I hate to be Danny Downer on your Bulls optimism, mm-hmm. but all the great that's happening in the front office, they still have Jim Boylan as the head coach, and that's still just going to be there until he's not. But another thing about it is, I think there is going to be a period of show me with the Bulls. The front office is great, and they have a great track record. But until they actually do something and prove that they are all the things we hope they are, there's going to be a period of show me where free agents aren't just going to flock here because there's new names hanging on the door outside the general manager's office.
Danny, very valid point, very eloquently said, very lucid. as they like to say in My Cousin Vinny. But, and we got to take a quick break and I'll come back. The thing is, if they do a much better job, I'm talking markedly better, at player development with the guys they have, they draft well this year, wherever that pick is. Right now it's slotted 7. Maybe they get lucky in the lottery, maybe they don't. Whatever the case may be, if that group, and Jim Boylan's not going to be the coach. I'll be stunned if he's the coach. And if he is, that's a joke. I do not believe he'll be the coach. I'm telling you, people around the league are going to look and go, hold on a second, who the hires coach? Like that guy. Wow, they added another young player. In a year, they're going to have some salary cap room. Tell you what, it's a great city. Let's take a look at that situation. Because I'm also going to tell you a story I learned while I was out of town. How close things came in 2010. We'll talk about that. Your calls, 312-332-3776 with Danny N. Zetterman and Christopher Emmanuel Black. I'm David Kaplan. Be right back. Hey, this hour brought to you by Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Illinois. Through life's ups and downs, and for all the journeys ahead, you know what to bring. The card you can count on, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, through it all.
Did you miss some Cap and Company? Your podcast is ready. Chicago's home for sports is on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
This is Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
So last week when I was on vacation, I was on the phone with a great friend of mine and a great friend of our show, Tom Thibodeau. And I said, hey, man, have you seen the Windhorst article on the 2010 chase of LeBron, Bosh, Wade, etc.? He goes, yeah, I saw it. He goes, have you seen the Rick Bucher article? I said, no, I haven't. So I found it. And I said, okay, Tibbs, how close did it really come? He said, dude, if we could have gotten a third slot, he goes, and it was not that we didn't try. If we could have gotten a third slot, we were getting those guys. I truly believe it. We were going to get those guys. And they tried to move Luol Deng, who had had some injuries that season. They couldn't get the Clippers to take the contract. They thought they might be able to get it done with the Raptors. They couldn't. And in the end, they only had 2 slots. Bosh had told them, I'm in. I'm coming. And then Dwayne Wade called them and said, I want a second meeting, and said, can you get a third slot? The Bulls truly believe they would have gotten those 3 guys. And when they couldn't put them all together, the 3 of them stayed loyal to the bond that they developed, going back to what Danny was talking about, in Beijing, when the 3 of them said, we got to play together. But they were going to do it here. Does that make you sick, Danny, thinking how close it actually came? And I know you two talked about it when I was gone, but does it make you sick to go, oh my God, it actually was way closer than people realize?
I don't know if it makes me sick. I mean, we've heard those stories before. It frustrates me as a Bulls fan thinking what could have been. Oh, especially God. Since those Miami teams beat our Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yep.
It's frustrating as a Bulls fan to think what could have been. It would have been amazing to be able to cheer those teams on. And it would have been interesting to see how different us Bulls fans feel about LeBron James had he come to Chicago and won a championship 2 or 3. You know, like right now, I think MJ's the greatest ever. No matter what, he's the greatest ever, whether LeBron was a Bull or not. I think we all believe MJ was the greatest ever. But we all do have a little bias towards MJ because he wore a Bulls uniform. I wonder how that bias would be different had LeBron donned a Bulls uniform for a few years.
Can you imagine what it would be like 20 years from now, we all look back and go, we had number 1 and number 2. Like, that would have been insane.
Yeah, but I don't think you really ever have LeBron as a number 2. Like, I feel like, in my mind at least, LeBron will always be a Cavalier.
So what if he goes on and wins 4 more titles in L.A.?
He won't.
Still think of him as a Cav?
Yeah, that's his hometown team. He broke the curse there. He won the first championship there in how many years? I think, for me, he's a Cavalier. Like, if he goes into the Hall of Fame, and I know it's not like baseball where you go in wearing a hat, but I would think LeBron James would go into the Hall of Fame as a Cav. I could be wrong, But like the big three in Miami, that was great, but it was the big three. It wasn't the LeBron show only. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Cleveland, it was the LeBron show.
Boy.
What do you think, Chris? Am I wrong about that?
About the LeBron's retirement?
Yeah, like, do you consider him a Cav?
Yeah, he's a Cav.
Okay, but do you consider him a Cav if, and again, it's a big if, he wins multiple championships in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably still a Cav, but...
But ask yourself this. Let's say he wins three championships in L.A., which he's not going to. I would go to FanDuel.com and bet that he's not going to win three championships in L.A. But if he's going to win three championships in L.A., is LeBron James the face of the Lakers? No. Kobe, Magic, Kareem. I mean, there's a list of Lakers you'd put before that. So I don't identify him with the Lakers.
Yeah, it's the Cavs.
Yeah, plus where he's from. Plus where he's from. So it was interesting. I was one of the articles I read, and I was also told this by a friend of mine who said that when Jerry said to LeBron, LeBron had said, what would you do? He said, I'd go back to my hometown and play in Cleveland. And LeBron went, I'm not from Cleveland. I'm from Akron. That's not my hometown. So it was interesting. LeBron did not look at himself as a Clevelander. He looked at himself as an Akron guy. So thought that was funny. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. I do want to play some baseball audio in a little while. We're also going to talk to Mark Spears and find out what it is like being in the NBA bubble as a media person. Are you quarantined? What was the testing procedure like? What is your food like? Are you interacting with players? Are you getting this massive advantage over anyone else that's not there? I know our friend Malika Andrews is down there. I believe Rachel Nichols is down there. There's a number of media people. Mark Medina was on TV with me yesterday from USA Today, and he took me through his experience. So Mark Spears from ESPN and the Undefeated, he does a great job covering the league and is wildly connected. We'll get his thoughts. He's going to be coming up and joining us from the bubble in Orlando. And we'll ask him his opinion on what Brian Windhorst said and what Danny was talking about, Chris was talking about. Is it a huge advantage for players that might want to team up that they're all in the bubble together? And unfortunately for the bottom feeders in the NBA, they're not down there. They don't have their players there, and they don't have that opportunity. We check in on the bubble with our friend Mark Spears of ESPN in 2 minutes.